Hello, everyone. This is Cole from the American Journal of Healthcare Strategy. A really special guest today who's going to talk about an important topic, Cassandra. Cassandra, can you please introduce yourself and give us a little bit of information about your background?
Absolutely. Well, I'm Cassandra Stompoli, and I have been a labor and delivery nurse for the majority of my nursing career, which has been a little over 24 years. I got into leadership about five, six years ago, and been in different leadership roles, but the majority of my leadership has been within women's and children's services. That's a high level, I guess, overview about me and what I've come from.
And then now you're doing leadership and you're doing consulting, and you've kind of become, taking these frontline skills and then also applying these business and strategy skills to it. What caused you to make that transition?
I'll go way back. And as a bedside labor and delivery nurse, there was all kinds of times where people would come to me as a natural leader on the floor within the unit and just, you know, talk to me about different things, whether it was NICU things, postpartum things, anything really, and want me to just kind of step forward to bring those to upper management. And with that being said, I would come home from the hospital working my shifts and say, you know, this is what's going on to my husband. And he would be like, well, he'd listen for a long time. And then finally, I think he said to me, well, it's time to put up or shut up. And you can either go back and get your master's and try to do something different and make a difference, or you're going to continue to do what you're doing at the bedside, knowing that leadership will potentially, you're not going to have a whole lot of say in it. With that being said, I enrolled that fall. I was at an ASN. I had my associates. I do have a psychology degree that I had initially. I went back to school with two kids in school, all four of our kids. We have four kids from 9 years, 10 years apart kind of thing, from the oldest to the baby. And I decided it was time for me to go back to school to see if I can make a difference. And so here I sit. Many years later, a lot of lessons learned, a lot of different educational things that I've taken away from other leaders, both good and bad, to kind of bring that transition, different kind of leadership to the floor.
Absolutely. And we're so happy that you did go back to school and be a leader, because you're able to help educate us on some of these really really important and very pressing issues. And I think that's kind of the first question I just want to ask is, you know, from my perspective, the two issues that stick out are the cost. People are really upset about the cost of this because it's so expensive to have a child in the United States. And then the other issue is this disparities, right? We have different sections of the city, different sections of the country, races and income status that have very different outcomes when it comes to maternal fetal health. So from where do you sit on that? What are kind of the biggest issues? Is there any that I left out that come to mind?
There's a lot to unpack there with those two, even those two basic there, and a lot of concerns come from, you know, that we can start with disparities. When it comes to those kind, and there's many, many different kinds. Obviously we have, you just talked about socioeconomic, you also talked about racial. I mean, there's just a whole lot that factor into that. The biggest thing, and I guess the first step that I have seen and that I have helped implement as I do my consulting, is looking at, and everybody has to kind of realize that there are these implicit biases that we have. You don't mean to have them, they are just there. And so recognizing that there are differences, right? There are differences within culture. There's differences with, we have a lot of different nationalities and cultures in the United States. We are the melting pot. And we need to recognize where we stand with those. And especially in labor and delivery, there's a lot of different things that you're trying to do. And, you know, patient arrives, and if they're not speaking English, then we need to get that. We need to recognize that we need to get an interpreter. Like, we need to have that. We need to address that. And being a lot of hospitals are moving towards, not all, but the majority of them are moving towards having annual competencies in these different biases that we have, and making sure there's a difference even within the hospital, not just, there's a difference between a labor and delivery patient and a med-surg patient when it comes to those biases. So we have to recognize that and educate and make sure that we're doing that on an annual basis. And it, when we see something, if a coworker, you see some kind of bias there, we need to address that in the moment, because we do need to make sure that we're taking care of the complete patient, mom, baby, family as well. When it comes, that's just the tip of the iceberg, right? There's so many different things that kind of go with that. One of the main focuses now is surrounding depression and postpartum depression and what that looks like, and how do we address those kinds of issues within the pregnant postpartum patient. A lot of this is education within not only the labor and delivery staff, but also including the family. And having that, they see that patient every single day. They're having that discussion with them, and we need to make sure that we're addressing that and recognizing it. There's no shame in having postpartum depression. There's no shame in having any kind of mental health issue in general. But we need to make sure that we're opening up in the lines of communication so that we can address those and take care of our patients holistically when it comes to that stuff. And that includes doing it. We have started doing postpartum depression scale screening prenatally. We do it at delivery. They do it postpartum as well. So these are all questions that are being asked prenatally the first time you come to present to the hospital, whether it's for a triage or for an induction or just active labor, but also postpartum. Most of these follow-up conversations regarding postpartum depression are not generally focused around, sorry, that was my phone going off, not recognizing that it's not always handled within the prenatal or the postpartum OBGYN visits. They are finding that a lot of these are being handled when the mom goes to their pediatricians, because they're having more frequent conversations with those, you know, new baby checkups, no well baby checkups, that the pediatricians are seeing these moms and these family members more often. And so they can start addressing what that looks like at those visits. So that's a lot that, like I said, to impact there.
That seems like a very important program, right? Because we've known, and that's another issue that I didn't think of too, is that the postpartum depression and mental health, especially women's mental health in this country, of course, as we know, it's been neglected for so long. And it makes sense that flows into maternal mental health. And so I think one of the questions is, is there any techniques you used to actually implement that program? You know, as an early careerist, it seems like implementing a program like that would be very challenging. And as a consultant, any advice on how to implement these programs at institutions?
I think that there's again, opening lines of communication, right? We don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's hospitals across the United States that I have either worked in or been a consultant in that you don't have to, bringing these forward and talking about these with upper leadership is really being, it's a patient safety focus, right? We need to make sure that we're doing what's best for our patients and our staff. And so how do we take care of everybody across the board? And so you don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's a matter of reaching out and saying to another hospital, local hospital, sister hospitals, right? What have you seen? What are you doing? How have you addressed this issue here? And if you don't have that connection, it's trying to find, you know, reaching out and saying, okay, I need some help in this area. Again, no shame in asking for help, because we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. If it's something is working in the state of New York, you know, what can we do in California or the state of Washington? How do we build that to be similar, maybe not the same, because you have different states, different laws, different things there, codes and what they need to do, but how can you use that same information to build what you have? And that's kind of where it takes. And again, it's opening communication between your pediatricians, your OBGYN providers, you have social workers within the hospitals. Bring everybody together to understand that this is what's going on and how they do it and what needs to happen with that.
One of the questions I have on that note is, how do you stay up to date? How do you stay in contact with all these organizations? Like you said, that collaboration, that knowledge sharing is important, but that seems very time consuming. Is this what your way, you know, as a consultant, where you're spending a lot of your time is gathering this knowledge?
Some of it, yes. But the other part of it is, you know, Women's and Children's Services as a whole, we have that national program. AWON is our governing you know, that we look at. They have their guidelines and they have their standards. So it's almost like a one-stop shop sometimes that you can go in there and you can look up, you know, what are they doing? What, and that can maybe start the ball rolling to kind of see what's going on across the entire, whether it's the United States. Most of A1 is global, but at the same time, this is the what we focus on within the lower 48, 50 states that we have. They give you, you know, these recommendations, the most up-to-date research. This is where you're finding your evidence-based practice, and then you're trying to bring that information so you don't have to go searching all over the place. You can bring that same knowledge back and maybe start the ball rolling with the providers and knowing what they have and what they see and what they're doing. And what they look, what they're seeing when they have those postpartum or the pediatric well-child checkups, what are you seeing? How can we do a better job when it comes to our patients as a whole?
Really great advice. That's important. And so we talked about how having the interpreter services is essential, monitoring for postpartum depression. And then it comes to kind of the question surrounding patient experience. So we know a lot of people are looking to have elevated patient experiences, especially during that extremely stressful time. And so what strategies are you implementing, or have you seen that as successful to try to really elevate that experience that kind of fit in with a lot of the technologies that we're implementing today?
Yeah. So technology wise, I mean, I'll be honest, everybody that, and anybody probably who's listening is healthcare wise, everything changed with COVID, right? Everything changed. The way we see healthcare, the way we deliver healthcare, all of that technology that we didn't always use on a regular basis became very important during COVID, because we had a lot of people that did not want to go to the hospital. We had people that did not want to go to, you know, their doctor's appointments because they were too scared of what that would look like, right? And what they would be exposing themselves. And as a pregnant mother, what are you exposing yourself to, you know, when you're going to the doctor? You know, you're not really sure. So with COVID, it brought about a lot of different changes. You know, we are looking at how are we using and using our technology to reach some really remote places. People, you know, are able to, usually you have your cell phones. Most people have a cell phone now. And so using that technology or a computer, whatever they have, to have those doctor's visits, you know, that telehealth is huge across the board. You know, how can we keep in contact with our patients when they need to be seen? So it's not a barrier. It's not a hindrance to getting prenatal care or postpartum pediatric care down the road. What does that look like? The other part of that is you have this telemedicine. If you've got somebody who is very high risk, you've got, you know, severe hypertension, you've got gestational diabetes, you have all of those kinds of specialists that the patient may or may not be able to get to all of those appointments, you know, because of different reasons, social determinants that they have, whatever that looks like. So how can we bring that patient in contact with them? And that's where our telehealth, you know, we have lots of times technology is wonderful, where we have gestational diabetes that can be monitored from afar, and a central like location can see that a mom has taken a blood sugar. A gestational diabetic mom can have a blood sugar that is way out of range, high or low. And that person immediately knows in that centralized call center, that something is going on. And so their policy may be to recheck a blood sugar and, you know, take and eat something and recheck your blood sugar after you've, you know, given yourself some insulin and follow back. If it's still out of range, then there's a contact, there's a phone call. There's like, how are you doing? Do we need to have you go to the doctor? Do we need to have you go to the emergency room? Where do we need to stand? But that technology has allowed people to have exponentially different experiences with different providers to make sure that they're getting the best care across the board. It's also with that same thing with electronic the medical record. Different providers can actually see and document. So there's not that gap of, I need to get my medical record from physician A to take it to physician B, who then may send me to physician C. You're not trying to, as a patient to collect all of that and take it in. As long as we're able to share, and if they have the similar medical records, they can see each other's, you know, their notes. So the this patient who's probably high risk, like I said, seeing different physicians, they don't have one more thing to take and remember or to take care of.
That's so important, because there's a lot of people that you're dealing with when you're pregnant, right? It's not just your one doctor. You know, you have a ton of people.
Well, and then when you come into the hospital, there's other, I mean, we have, you know, it used to be back in the day when I first started, we had, you were hooked up to the monitors and you were connected to a machine, right? You were connected to that. You're watching contractions, you're watching the fetal monitoring, the heart rate. And when a patient had to get up to go to use the bathroom, if they had, they were sitting to get an epidural, you were fighting with the cords. Nowadays they have wireless ones that you can walk, patients can walk around the room with this great technology, and the baby can be monitored as they're doing. They're sitting on a birthing ball, you know, rocking in a chair, walking the halls, if they have enough technology that gets it wireless throughout the hallways, those kinds of things. So we're not losing data knowing if our baby is doing okay and how mom's doing, but but you're not worried about the cords, and you're not worried about all of what the interaction and the barriers to having that patient have the experience that they want to have.
Right. And so that clearly would create a much kind of elevated patient experience compared to the traditional, you know, having the wiring. And also that flows into the telemedicine, you know, being able to access the specialists, really high quality care, being able to not have to worry as much about your blood sugar because it's being monitored. I mean, those things are excellent. Yeah. One of the concerns that might be presented, though, is when it comes to budgeting and prioritization. And this also goes into best practices. So when we're looking at some of these rural hospitals or hospitals who might have had some financial problems, they haven't been advancing at the same rate. When it comes to choosing what to invest in, what are some of the priorities as far as best practices go that really need to be emphasized when caring for, you know, these new parents?
I always go back to patient safety. You know, that's where you know, when you're looking at different technologies, you're looking at different systems. How can we deliver the best care, the safe evidence-based practice care that is the safest? And you are absolutely correct. These things, technology is not cheap, right? You know, everything comes down to that bottom line. And hospitals after COVID have struggled. We've heard about them, the struggle, you know, meeting the expectations, doing more, the staff and, you know, physicians and providers, clinical team doing more with less. Right. We're trying to make sure that so it's a challenge. And so I always try to take a step back, especially with consulting, and saying, hey, listen, what are our budget look like? And these are the top safety things like we have, you know, can you continue to fetal monitor without having wireless? Absolutely. Can you, you know, your medical record, do you need to update it? Maybe get by the latest version so that we have more universal, generalized across the board within that, whatever health system organization that they have, the same medical records so that we can do that. Maybe just that, again, comes down to the numbers. But then it is, telemedicine is huge. I would say that's probably where I would start, just because if you can connect the patients with the, not only the prenatal, your OBGYN, but you've got any other consulting aspects that this patient may need, that's going to be able to deliver quality, high quality patient care, patient safety, and you're going to have a mom who, while they may be rural, will have a better experience, will come in with better prenatal records so that we can then take and know the bigger picture when we're delivering them and taking care of them postpartum.
Does that increase the catchment area a lot then by enabling that telemedicine service?
Yeah, I think that it gives you, I mean, you can reach a lot of me. I'm in a hospital right now that is very small, but it's servicing the whole, you know, the whole county and beyond. So having to drive, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours for a 30-minute doctor's appointment or a 45-minute doctor's appointment, whatever, that's a lot to ask a mom, even a first-time mom with children, it's even more of a struggle because you're trying to wrangle all those little ones and get them in the car and get to the doctor. And if you have the ability to have a conversation like we are right now, it makes it so much better. The patient feels like they're getting that care that they need, and they want it. All moms want to do what's best for their babies. You know, they want a healthy baby. And so taking that off of their plate is huge.
I appreciate that advice because I also think about how that could impact social determinants of health, right? Because yeah. Transit's an issue. You know, a lot of these, you know, soon to be mothers are still working, right? Yeah. And so that's also a thing. Have you seen in your experience where the telemedicine has of course increased catchment, but has also reduced some of those kind of mortality, you know, factors in terms of SDOH?
Yeah, absolutely. I will tell you though, social determinants of health in general, it is obviously something that we are monitoring and every hospital should be looking at when people arrive to the. Is it done 100% of the time? No, but it is increasing. And so getting everybody on the same page and making sure that we're addressing all of those social determinants, right, that are going to impact this patient as a whole, and trying to handle all of that and help them manage that is it's not new, but it's evolving. It's continuing to evolve and what that looks like. Now repeat the question, Cole, because I was like going down another rabbit hole with social determinants. Do I see that it's the catch, like the net that we're throwing is capturing and it's giving us better outcomes?
Yeah, is the kind of the telemedicine approach, we know that it's increasing the catchment area, it's capturing rural areas, it's capturing
Yes.
individuals who might not have been captured, which is
Yes.
great. At the same time, though, is it also helping us to reduce some of these barriers?
Yeah, and what we're seeing, hospitals are obviously looking at different kind of metrics and benchmarks right across the board. We're looking at, are we seeing any kind of different shift with our newborns? Are we having more complications that is causing these rural hospitals who maybe have a nursery level one that they're not having to transfer or transport a baby that is not that because of moms having this telemedicine, being able to have those consults, being able to have that connection with a provider, or again, like we were talking about with gestational diabetes, having a call center who can actually relay and say, hey, listen, what's going on with your blood sugar kind of thing in the moment. You're seeing that we're having healthier pregnancies, we're having less transports out, we're having less, those little hospitals are able to keep mom and baby together so that we're not having one in one hospital and one in another. It's again evolving and it's still like trying to be we're ca trying to capture that data as it continues to it's like a moving target, right? Things are changing so fast when sometimes with technology that you can't always keep up as to what's causing what to be a better outcome. And so obviously addressing these in the moment is huge and is giving us better outcomes as a whole.
On the note of moving targets, I'll ask you the final question. And that comes down to policy, right? So we have these technologies that we're having to adjust to, like you just mentioned, so we always are keeping an eye on the mortality rates, on the complication rates. But then you have this kind of added financial business layer, which is government policy that then changes how the finances work. But in some instances, we've seen it can actually impact doctors and how they practice. How are you able to prepare for policy changes? Any tips in that area?
Again, I think that for me, in the experience that I've had, is it really is opening up communication, right? And having being transparent, looking at providers, and I mean, I work very closely in my practice with revenue integrity. I'm looking at finance. I'm looking at providers and having that conversation, open discussions about the what they're seeing and what we're doing and how we can marry that together with the care that we're giving. I'm very transparent with my staff, no matter where I'm at, because I want them to understand that, hospitals are a business, right? Providers, there's a business there. There's that the bottom line. I shouldn't say the bottom line. Safe patient care is really where our bottom line. But money does rule the world, and money does drive hospitals and organizations in general. So how do we open up that communication to be transparent and to be able to say, this is what we're seeing, whether it comes to insurance companies, federal, state, all of those policies that come down. How is all of that impacting this? And everybody's an individual. So what I get and what you get and what whoever's listening to this get, it's all individualized to a certain extent. And so when somebody comes in for labor and delivery, we have a range of which how we're doing this and handling that. I really look at, and it's one of the first things I do is a hospital productivity within the women's services area and see where we're at. Like I said, reaching out to our revenue integrity. What are we able to do? How are we, what's going on behind the scenes so that I can understand the bigger picture of what the unit, what the hospitals is facing when it comes to these policies. It can be tricky, I'll be honest. Every state has a little bit of different stuff, right? Even things are coming down, you have to be able to move and adjust. That's probably one of the biggest struggles, I would say, just because it's not universal. Every state has something different. So diving into that state's issues and that state's policies and their and what the standard of care is and what the scope of practice is and what does that all impact and how does the different insurances impact that state. It can be a moving target, but again, it's opening up the conversation. You know, there's a lot of people that are going home since COVID. I would say the beginning of it was in COVID. Most of our maternal patients, our postpartum patients, are going home at that 24-hour mark because when COVID, nobody wanted to be in the hospital. And now they're finding that, you know, going home at 24 hours, if everybody is healthy and it's a good idea to discharge and it's not, you know, 11:30 at night, we're trying to send a new mom home. You have to look at that and see what that looks like. Obviously, you know, the goal is always safe patient care. So, you know, getting those patients who want to go home, they don't want to be in the hospital, you know, even a new mom, she's getting the care that she needs, but she doesn't want to stay there. She's more comfortable in her own environment with her family and her friends around. Right. So having that and having that conversation, we're trying to do what's best for everybody involved and making sure that we're doing that with safe discharges with both mom and baby. That does help the bottom line, you know, doing it. If that means in one state that it's a bucket of money and it doesn't matter if you discharge at 24 hours or, you know, 3 days later, basically, what does that look like and how much revenue is coming in? There's other, you know, states that I've been in where it's not, it's a, you know, the patient comes home, is there and they're one day. And if they stay the next day and that's the way that that needs to be, that they don't want to be discharged right away. And insurance is going to pay for 2 days for a vaginal delivery and potentially 3 days for a C-section. Then what's the best there? You know, I mean, it's not just always a bucket. Sometimes it's day by day, you know, post-op, post-day delivery, 1, 2, 3, or is it a bucket kind of thing? Which is nice because, you know, I obviously, we talked about earlier, I'm married and my husband was a insurance attorney. So I have lots of conversations that we talk about the different nuances of that, which is, I will say, credit to myself because I get to have that knowledge right there. So when I come home asking questions about different insurance things and what that looks like, it's huge for me to be able to bounce things off of him with that aspect. So that's something that's, you know, not everybody has, but I am very thankful that I do.
Absolutely. And we can tell from this conversation that you're extremely knowledgeable in this area. And also that does make sense on the policy end too, where you get some of that added information from, because it's complicated. And so you've done well, I think. We've discussed the technology implementation and how that works. And then also that last piece on, you know, the kind of the big challenges of the way that different states, you know, organize their budgeting. I think that overall, one of the biggest themes, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that communication and collaboration throughout the entire organization is the most important thing, probably just below patient safety.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, it goes almost hand in hand, because if you are opening communication, right, across the board, and everybody has the same focus of safe patient care and the patient's best experience, then it drives that patient safety. You know, so having that, and as a leader, one of the things is I don't have to always be right. It's not always my idea. So, you know, I always think that the more heads are better, the more heads that are thinking about a certain project, policy, whatever it happens to be, you get different areas of specialty that come into that. And so then you're focusing on everybody coming together for that, to provide the best policy that's going to bring in all of those aspects, right? And then you put forth what addresses all of those things. And so having that, yeah, communication and transparency is really, really key, I believe. And it's something that I've used everywhere that I go, to be transparent. And there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, that was my idea, didn't work very well. Let's try that one again, kind of thing. Let's reorganize. And, you know, what part of this went well, what part of it did we need to, you know, make shift on, whether it's a complete shift or, you know, just a minor little tweak to something. Absolutely. Yeah. They kind of go hand in hand.
Very, very good advice, Cassandra. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We hope we can have you on again in the future. Of course, we're going to have the links in the description and whatnot. But yeah, please, you know, our door is always open to have you. Very knowledgeable and great amount of information. So thank you again.
Well, thank you for having me, and anytime. Yeah.